Jace Martinez on Cold Fusion.
And how come nobody
yeah, Finn, Bob.
Here's James.
A bad word.
Here's James.
Versus Cold Fusion? I can't believe it. I was actually driving in Palm Springs, California when I first heard the announcement on the radio. And I was driving, and it's like 100 degrees out there, got the windows blown down, the music's blaring, and then they break for commercials, and the news comes on. And when I heard the news, and like, they have a big announcement about Pons and Fleischmann, these two gentlemen have come up and said they've got this Cold Fusion reaction, and it's going to change the entire world of energy. And the first thing I thought of, and I knew, is I said, these guys are either going to be killed, or their careers are finished. And none of this is ever going to come out, ever. And that's exactly what happened. They destroyed their careers. And I knew from that moment on, because I've been around a lot of the stuff behind the scenes with government and other people that I've known that are in the military and so forth for a long time, and I just was like, it's too bad that every time anybody tries to help out, they're shot down. All these guys that are here, to me, are like total true revolutionary radical heroes, because they've been working tirelessly for long periods, most of their life, and they've not received any assistance. I mean, when did Tesla die? Years ago. Years ago. And none of that stuff has come out. None of it. Why not? And I began to, like, consider the ramifications of, well, let's figure out why all of this stuff has been suppressed, who's behind it, what's the real story, and so forth. So media ecology is basically the study of human perception and the intermesh of technology. And what that means is, and the best way I've described it on radio is, I always talk about the cell phone, what the cell phone did to communications, what it did to human behavior, what it did to culture, because that's the easiest thing for people to understand. And a cell phone, I've talked about on the radio, is hours and hours and hours, and people are kind of sick of it, but it's the easiest way to explain it. It is, most people now, when you walk into a place in California, particularly a restaurant, most people are looking down. And they're looking down, and they're not even there with their families. People go out with their families to eat, and they're not even there. They're texting, writing, listening, whatever they're doing, and it's changed the way we interact with each other. And one of the things that media ecology studies is the effect of technology and what it's going to do to culture, perception, and human behavior. And when I first started on radio, I was actually doing something really dangerous, but I was going to do it anyway. And that was sue the banks publicly in front of everybody. And here's what I did. I used to work for a gentleman by the name of Walter Boert. He was the author of a book called Operation Mind Control. It's very famous work. A lot of people all over the world now reference that and use it and say mind control this, mind control that, mind control everything. And I happened to meet him when I was being interviewed in Tucson, Arizona. And it was like an instant brotherhood. I was very, very close to him. It was a very long friendship. I was friends with him until he died. And when I started talking to him, one of the first things that came up would
spinning out. I guess it'll come back.
What's really going on? So I dropped out, and I'm glad I did, actually, because most of the information that's been discussed here by a lot of the...
I'm going to go back, see if we missed a sentence.
...any of it, and I wasn't going to participate and pay money at a school where they... It changed the way I looked at the world. I dropped out of college because I just... Years ago, I worked for and was recruited... by government people, actually.
That's too far back. That's the beginning.
He said to me, he looked at me directly in the eye.
So he's talking about Boert here.
The banks, and who are the people behind them. Not the banks so much, but the people who run them and make the decisions about how things are going to be, what gets financed, and so forth. And Walter Boert had a very interesting history, and he looked at me directly in the eyes, and he said, you know what? You're the anti-banker. Like, the Antichrist, you're the anti-banker. because I had complete, total disdain and disgust for what they were doing to the world and the decisions that were being made that you guys should be participating in. I think that that's going to end now. And I'll tell you some of the things that I did in radio and how it all started. First and foremost, I want to let everybody know that I was set to bring this next gentleman, Russell Means, here. He passed away recently. He was one of my close friends. He's a movie star, civil rights activist, and one of the most courageous people I've ever met. And he was the first person ever, as far as I know, celebrity-wise, to ever stand up and back up Cold Fusion publicly. In fact, that happened recently in the last 2 or 3 months. Because as far as I'm concerned, the biggest problem with this entire field of all these new inventions and new people is because there is not enough publicity, and the way it's presented to people is not a way that people can digest it in a very good way. I heard people talk about this movie Thrive, and everybody knows about that, and I heard from Hollywood people and celebrities and so forth how great this was and blah, 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 blah. And most of you people know about that stuff anyway. But the fact is, it was packaged really well and presented really well in an entertaining format that has high production value. And I would suggest to all the people that are scientists here, if you're going to be putting out and talking about this, you need to have high production value, because most people, you're competing against so much media consumption that people do every single day that you're not going to be able to transmit your message across the board very well. So I want to remind that and make a suggestion to everybody about that, because it needs to be done. So let me go back to Russell Means here. And this is a big story, and I kept it secret for a while, because I initially, when I started in radio, I didn't plan to go into radio. I got invited on radio because I was suing all the banks for millions and millions of dollars and getting people out of credit card debt, signature loans, taking care of their mortgages, getting their life back. And I called to do an interview with Russell Means.
This is all such crap. He does not mention where he gets these words from, which is from Bob and Ion. He will not discuss where he got this script from. He's blatantly lying here.
And he basically, and that was in the very beginning, he basically embraced everything that I was doing and said, you know, do you want to do a radio show together? And I was like, what? I was like, whoa, that's a big, you know, tall order. I know who he is, and I know what he's done. And I was really flattered that he asked me to do that. And but I didn't follow through on that, because I didn't want to tarnish.
He was distracted by me at that point. That's why he didn't go there. He went to Bob.
His image and what he's done. Because I'm all over the place on the radio. I'm totally obnoxious. I totally get in people's faces. I'm super...
Not true.
...controversial. I don't give a damn about a criticism per se.
Not true.
And he asked me, and I, you know, got to know him and his wife very, very well. And he invited me to his home. He invited me to the Sovereign.
That's 5 years later, after being involved with us.
...of Lakota. In South Dakota, and he was very welcoming of everything I've done, because he thought of me like, wow, you're like me, you like drop the hammer on these people. So he passed away, and one of the things that I wanted to bring up, and I did go public.
Russell and James weren't talking iron anymore, so they died.
Recently, but I didn't go into too much detail about it, is after he... asked me, because he was always interested in Cold Fusion, and he asked me, he called me out of the blue, and he goes, you know, James, can you get me one of these devices, these Cold Fusion devices? And I'm like, good luck with that. Like, but I can ask. I mean, because he just asked me flat out, can you get me a Cold Fusion device? And I'm like, they're not even out yet. And if you did have one, it would be millions and millions of dollars. And I don't think anybody's going to do that for you. I was just real honest with him, because I was interviewing everybody at that point. I knew a lot of scientists in the field and so forth.
And he was on the radio with the people who actually had it, but he couldn't understand that.
And I think that's not going to happen. But I was wrong. So what I did is I called up Dr. Andrea Rossi. Now, I didn't expect the response that I got from him, but I was really glad that I did get that from him. So I emailed him, and I was like, I'm not going to call him direct. I'm going to email this to him and let him digest this issue and then see what his response was. So I emailed him, and he surpassed my everything. He basically said, I'm going to give one of these devices for free when it's available to the American Indian people.
It never became available because it didn't work, and we had already monopolized it.
And I don't know if a lot of you know what the American Indian people have been through, but it's just...
Well, now they're into WeJot 68, thanks to the Lakota and Brendan, so we hope Russell gets on board with, well, his leftovers get on board with that.
But in the United States, most people don't even know about it. The entire Lakota Nation, American Indian people have been basically murdered. And they're not wanted. They're the minority of the minorities. And I read the email from Rossi, and I was like, oh, my God, I can't believe this guy's done this, because it's a little premature. But that act of kindness, I'll never forget that, because I wasn't sure about...
This is 8 years ago.
Rossi's nature. So I called up Russell Means, and I told him, I said, oh, you want to sit down for this? And I said, listen, I had done some correspondence with Dr. Andrea Rossi, and he said, listen, he's going to give you one of these when it becomes available. A white man is going to give you a cold fusion device for your people. And he was complete.
Well, that's bullshit. None of it happened.
Blown away by that. I heard his voice on the phone, and I was like really taken back that he was so happy for that, because he'd been a big
then he died
and kind of outspoken about these new technologies that all of you are talking about, and kind of healing the earth. And he was very, very angry what the United States had done to his people. He's very angry about what was the oil companies were doing. He's very angry about that people couldn't understand and embrace the fact that, you know, we can't keep doing this to planet Earth at all. So I took...
Yes, we can.
...that story, and I decided, okay, I need to make this a big story, an international story. This is a big deal.
But... James lost his finances and went under the aqueduct, and he didn't make a big story.
Because cold fusion at that point, I mean, as much publicity as got was something on 60 Minutes, which is a big news show in the United States, that basically came out and confirmed that it existed. And that kind of restructured the entire field. And I talked to some mainstream media people about it, and it's unbelievable. They mainstream media doesn't understand you people at all. They don't even know what to say. They don't understand it. They don't know how to package it. They don't even know if it's relevant. And they're afraid of it. I work in Hollywood. I used to be a casting director. I have all sorts of access to media in New York, Los Angeles, news shows, all of that. And I basically what I decided to do is in radio is to be the PR arm for Cold Fusion and give these guys the respect.
The PR arm for RNA drops is what Sparsi got.
The credibility that they deserve via radio. It's the best way I could do to listen to them, put them on the record, let them say what they need to say, and give them some publicity that they so deserve. So I talked to mainstream media, and I told them, I said, you know who Russell Means is? I said, you know, he's a big movie star. He's been the Last of the Mohicans. Countless movies. He's been, you know, testified before Congress. This is a big guy. He's like respected all over the world. He was supposed to be here. I'm sad he is here right now. And I decided to take that story and sell it to the media. And I said, this is going to be great. We need this. We need a good story for Cold Fusion, for somebody to back this up who's got major power and weight and celebrity and put this thing forward. And I gave it to these guys, and they sat on it for months. And I'm like, here's the phone number of this guy. Here's Russell Means' phone number. You talk to each other, get it on, and then put it out. Sounds easy, right? No, not at all. That wasn't news at all. So I got a call back from one of these media people, and they said, we don't quite understand the story. I'm like, what? You don't understand? I just told you the story. Do you get it? Do you understand what's happened here at all? Even I have to, like, yell at a lot of people to shake them up, interrupt their patterns, because a lot of people have no idea who the hell all these scientists are and how much weight it is and what's going on. I'm so glad this conference is going on and it's being transmitted all over the place.
Conference went nowhere. They're all bogus scientists.
It's been a lot of mainstream media, they just don't get it. They understand how big Kim Kardashian's ass is and how popular she is in the United States, but they don't know this at all. And this is way more important than any of that. America's morally bankrupt, totally. It's broke. It's falling to pieces. There's no freedom of speech there. There's nothing. It's breaking to pieces. Now, that could be, you know, a blessing in disguise because people are starting to wake up now to what's really going on. So back to the story about these guys. So I say, listen, are you going to put this story out or not? I mean, it's pretty basic. Are you going to do it or not? And they go, well, we don't know, and we got to take it, and then we got to figure out who's going to buy it, and, you know, do we own the story? Do we not own the story? What's the deal with you? And all that other stuff. And I'm like, take it, would you? It's free. Just do it. Sounds easy, huh? No, not easy. No, not easy at all. So eventually they just dropped it because I just got pissed with these guys, and they said, you're wasting my time, and I'm going to screw with you. Here.
I have some disturbing news for anyone who sent an email in the past 7 days. Thanks to...
Period. Get out. Finish. And these people, these are the same media company that gave me full media credentials because they found out what I did against the banks. They found out about Russell Means. They found out other things that I'd done in the media that were important to shedding light where light deserves to be on, and that is all you guys, the scientists and the cold fusion people and all of you. And I decided, okay, I'm going to put it out on the internet. I'm going to release it that way. And then I didn't get a chance to tell Russell that, you know, they didn't get it. He put it, laughed at that. I'm like, well, of course, you know, of course they wouldn't get it. But this was the first person I could find that was actually going to come here, make a stand, and then go out and contact people in Hollywood and start to rev up the engine here. Because this is the first time, really, that... you know, there's actually been any publicity in this field at all. But let me just say this, as far as Russell goes. I will deliver cold fusion to the Lakota Nation.
No, he didn't do that. Brendan knows we did that, not James.
Period.
Very sparse applause. They know there's something off here.
So... I spoke to his wife prior to coming here, and
we have to get Brendan in touch with Russell Means' widow, see how she responds.
A pretty heavy conversation, but I said, listen, you know, you're going to be an ambassador to the Lakota Nation, and we're going to have to use you to pull this here. And I told him, this isn't going to be easy, it's got to be easy.
Now, this talk says, it says on the sign it's 2012. About a year later, Brendan found out about us, so that's where the real connection happened.
Years that have come there, there's going to be people that are going to come there, and it may take a couple of years to do that, but I don't want to let that go. And there are some advantages to delivering it to the Lakota Nation because it's not industrialized. A lot of the scientists that I talk to say, well, it'd be easier to deploy this technology in not high industry places like third world countries where they can go in and there's not so many laws.
What? Yeah, he got that for me, the third world option.
It's not, they don't have all this infrastructure they have to deal with, and it's a huge pain to deal with and all so forth, all that stuff. So it seemed like a good match to do that. And I spoke to his wife about it, and I know Russell, that was his kind of his last request. It's really, really important to him. He was looking at solar, he was looking at wind technologies.
And it went nowhere. So I guess Russell wants me to hear this today. Thank you to Cider Somerset posting this. And we already have our connection to Brendan. But Brendan now to go over and tell him what's up.
Sorts of things to facilitate liberating his people and liberating the rest of the world. He understood how important it was. You know, the organizers of this, They contacted me a long time ago, and I wasn't sure whether or not I wanted to take a public stance because I've not been a public person. I've been behind the scenes for a long time, working in the media environments and putting stories out that I thought were necessary under the guise of other direction and people and so forth.
That may be reference to us. Under the guise of other people and other directions. I and them. So we were a front for James because he didn't want to be known.
And here's the background of more about me. I wanted to address Russell up front because I need to pay him homage for all that he's done. So let me go to this next. This is the
now he goes to Walter Boert, who he didn't even know.
That kind of changed my life. It was written by Walter Boert. It was published by Dell. It was banned by the U.S. government. It was bought out. Walter Boert was, during his last days with me, one of the things that he said to me prior to his death, as I could ask, I said, what do you think, really, we need to clean up this huge, monolithic, gigantic mess that we're in? How do we fix this? Because most people have no clue how...
Walter told him to call Bob. Let's see if he says that.
Serious and deep and far the mess is, and how policy is made, who's making the policy, and how that's orchestrated. He did, and when he put that book out, they took him down. It really, really, he regretted writing that book because it changed the entire meme of information surrounding it. And one of the things he said prior to his death is, you know, I think the two things that we need to do to really change the world, you're going to be surprised at this, is cold fusion. We need to stop beating our children. And I didn't really understand what he meant by that until later on. And that's an important matter because one of the gentlemen that spoke yesterday, I commend him for working with children because they're really, to me, it's more valuable than gold or any money out there because these are the people that are going to be running the world and taking care of it. And we really don't have any education in the United States really that's any good. I think it's completely morally bankrupt, like I mentioned before. So I was doing an interview in Tucson, Arizona.
Hey, Bob, hang on. Yeah, all this is so bizarre. We knew Walter. We knew his children.
we knew
what a bad father he was. I mean, it's unbelievable, these words. And the whole Hollywood thing, I guess, James sort of love, hates Hollywood, but they keep saying, we have to go to people in Hollywood to get this going. I mean, remember the Mirror project in New York, the people that I was partnering with, they had some big Hollywood person who would...
Liz Taylor.
And the guy, the gay guy, who died. I mean, everybody
Malcolm
died.
Malcolm Forbes. Yeah, everybody dies.
Yeah, and then in L.A. when it would come up about... what I wanted to do with the minerals. Oh yeah, you gotta treat the Hollywood people and then they'll speak for you.
That's what Peggy said. Hitchcock said that.
Yeah, and Steve Bing.
Yeah.
You know, they all have this
Bing jumped off the roof a year or so ago.
Yeah, he wasn't taking his minerals. So
and his secretary became an employee of you at public support or whatever it's called. Support.
Customer service.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that's how Hollywood kind of keeps its finger on the pulse. They act like they're going to be the promoters of...
And James keeps that myth going back then.
Yeah, it's a terrible myth. Terrible. So, that's my input.
Well, this is James 2012, 2013. He collapses after the speech. This is his last speech. I don't know where they got the video. I heard about the speech. It's in Amsterdam or someplace, but it's interesting to show it up right now.
Yeah.
So, let's see. People say, I love this man's attitude. Balls to the wall. Very informative talk, not so much about the actual technology. That's right, he didn't have anything on
and
the technology.
He's not balls to the wall. I mean, he held back so much, he was afraid.
Well, he held back that he didn't know anything and that the closest he had was us. And he wouldn't talk about us.
He'd get on the show with you and I on, be the cheerleader, and then he'd do his own show and deny it all.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Not so much about the actual technology, he's not informed of there, but the circumstances that have kept this technology and its promise to the world civilization outside the consciousness of the minds of the human population. No, we brought that awareness to people. Too bad he doesn't actually give any real information, says Marky Mark. That's right. Yeah, but that argument is like the haters of Sterling Allen over at PESN. Mr. Martinez is a promoter journalist of this technology. No, he isn't. He didn't have the words to do it until he got media ecology from me. Not a scientist, engineer, or inventor, etc. It is actually these people that you would get the real information from. Problem is, most are too wimpy and get scared to be open in our boat or interested in the technology because they will lose their jobs or investor money. In this game, the engineers need to make the rules, not the investors. It's time they start talking. And then someone else says, after listening to the entire 54 minutes, I can totally understand why he says people in the media ask him to supply more information. He doesn't give any. In all due respect, James Martinez sounds a lot like Kevin Trudeau, Carolyn. Over and over again, I hear they don't want you to know, and I hear very little substance. I get it that the oligarchs want to keep us under their thumbs. Can you please describe it for the average human of average or above average understanding exactly what it is you are trying to say? No. James collapsed after that. Just listen to a little bit more and we'll stop.
Yeah, it's like they've learned how to self-promote, and they're always looking for something to promote. This was a great thing to promote, but there's no substance behind it.
Yeah, he didn't talk about us. We're the only ones who could talk about it. And he's using the word mediacology. He hadn't even read McLuhan. He didn't know how to talk about it. So he would mention these catchwords, but he never said anything about them because he didn't have enough knowledge. He didn't stick around long enough to learn the script, which Jack has to learn at some point.
Areas kind of exposing stuff and bringing stuff to the media environments and then releasing it. I met him in Tucson, Arizona. I met him. Both of us had very similar backgrounds. Both of us were adopted into families. And both of us had...
Back to talking to Bowery again.
I was doing an interview in Tucson, Arizona. I've been involved in all sorts of different areas, kind of exposing stuff and bringing stuff to the media environments and then releasing it. I met him in Tucson, Arizona. I met him. Both of us had very similar backgrounds. Both of us were adopted into families, and both of us had big interest in kind of liberating the human condition and changing and upgrading it from what it currently is. He was very influential in the 60s. He was started the counterculture in a newspaper back east in New York called the East Village Other. He testified before Congress, JFK, while he was alive regarding LSD. He was very famous for putting out news stories. He's kind of one of the first whistleblowers out there. And we had instant rapport because he knew my knowledge about the banking industry. And he married one of the people that put up the banking industry by the name of Peggy Mellon Hitchcock. Peggy Mellon, the Mellon Bank Dynasty, are the people that started the Federal Reserve and were in on it from the very beginning. And he started to discuss with me what I call the disease of richcraft, and what that entails, and who these people are that have all the money, and why they have all the money, and how the decisions are made. Because he was running around in those circles, and he was telling me, well, listen, you got to understand.
Mute, Carolyn.
Yeah.
We're in on it from the very beginning. And he started to discuss with me what I call the disease of richcraft, and what that entails, and who these people are that have all the money, and why they have all the money, and how the decisions are made. Because he was running around in those circles, and he was telling me, well, listen, you got to understand who these people are. They're extremely disassociated. And so, what do you mean disassociated? He said, disassociated is an altered state whereby most people, instead of being associated with their feelings, like when you talk to your wife or you say, I love you to your wife, you're present in the feelings or inside of you. When you're disassociated, you look at it in a picture. You're not in it. You watch it. And there's lots of books about that. One of them is called The Dissociated States of America. And it talks about the cyclical pattern of child abuse and how these people that are in these rich super families that we all hear about, we all know the names, how they can make decisions for everybody else and start wars and basically bankroll everything and not be here. They're not even really know what that is. Most people that have been through trauma and violence and so forth. They're not centered here at all, if they can't. It's one of the symptoms of trauma. And I listened to him real closely about that, and because when this book came out, it caused big waves. I mean, all over America now, they're using mind control, mind control, mind control, mind control, mind control, mind control all the time. And I really, he regretted writing this book because there's a lot of, he made some mistakes with it. And he put out a second book, actually, which I'll show a picture of shortly, that kind of fixed a lot of the problems. So when I got to know him, he was talking about cold fusion all the time, and I'm saying, you know, what do we need to do? And if you go on YouTube and look up Walter Boer, Operation Mind Control, you'll hear interviews of him talking about cold fusion and what needed to be done and how kind of dark the system was and the decision makers and people that were deciding the future of the human race and how it was being decided. Because there's a lot of people out there that think you don't matter at all. In fact, they don't even think you have the right to exist. And a lot of people need to wake up to that. They're right now, as you well know, a lot of people know, Monsanto, they have no problem poisoning you. None. It's no big deal. It's not a problem. There's no problem shooting, killing, maiming, all that stuff. It happens every single day. And I started to examine with them, like, what type of people are doing that? And how do they get to that position? Because most of them, they can send out an order, but if they're in the room actually shooting somebody or killing them or maiming them, they can't do it. So I started to examine many of the faculties and associations having to do with bankers. Because I had big problem with abuse of power in the banking field. And this is basically how it started. So I told him that I was suing credit card companies and banks. This was a long time ago, way before the crash. And he found out, well, how are you doing that? And what are you doing? And why are you doing that? And I said, listen, you know, I don't think that it's fair that banks can come in and take over everybody's life and then have the people be responsible for something they don't understand and realize what's happening. So what happened was I put together and was facilitating a company that was taking down credit card debt, mortgages, signature loans, everything. And then I started doing it behind the scenes secretly, quietly, and I put together a company and all the players in the company, and we started to take down the bank.
In January this year, I did ayahuasca with a shaman from Colombia. Now, for those of you who...
Banks, publicly. We went real public with that. I wasn't going to hide from anybody. I didn't care. That's it. So I had about 15 people in the company. We beat the banks out of probably somewhere in excess of $800 million. But what I did and found out is the media ecological ramifications of credit cards and how that media extension affects the central nervous system and how it disassociates somebody from understanding and using money. Because most people that I talk to, they're in massive amounts of debt and so forth. They don't even know how much debt they're in, and it's almost cut off. They don't even know. And so what I started doing, I put together this company. We started beating everybody, and lo and behold, when we started beating everybody, the banks came in and shut us down. Because
you're asking, what is he talking about? A company he worked for, this guy who quickly got arrested, and that ended it.
Yeah, I'm being kind of satirical, sarcastic. It's like he just keeps pushing his own agenda.
His own fake biography.
Fake biography, yeah.
I could have taken all the court dockets and reports and everything and put them up all on the screen.
He could have done that. What happened? Did he do it?
Yep.
And started using and getting out of, you know, this problematic issue with the banks. And these banks also, they're the same people that are not bankrolling this. I mean, it amazes me every day when I hear about this stuff that there's no financing. Still, after all this time, nobody's put any money up for these scientists, cold fusion or otherwise, even though I'm working on it right now. We'll get to that in a bit. So started on the radio reluctantly. I didn't really want to. I was asked to go on a station, and I started talking about what I was doing, and of course everybody loved it. And it became the number one show on the that network. It was called Republic Broadcasting with John Stadtmiller. I kept doing that.
And then I came on, and we got kicked off. in 2008. Then we went on G Radio.
Period of time teaching everybody how to do it and explaining throughout the time I was talking about, because they were just calling in, what is the solution? Is how we can? What's the ultimate equalizer for the people? And I said, Cold Fusion is. Is this going to change?
No, he got that from me. He didn't know about Cold Fusion.
No. Structure of money. And I went into some very complex issues about the what happens when information travels at the speed of light and how that changes finance.
No, James, it's speed of thought. And they never get to that level. There's a cliche, speed of light.
Now I had to go and prove my case for a long period of time. So one of the people that Walter Bower introduced me to was somebody who was active in the intelligence community that was very active in the 70s, by the name of Bob Neverett, who I still work with today.
Bob Never, who's he?
We're listening right now.
What? I'm listening right now? What's this?
Is this going to change the structure of money? And I went in all the arguments they're using and get signature loans, everything.
You got to go back. It jumps forward if you stop.
That's not a problem. There's no problem shooting.
Well, you got to go way back.
Some violence and so forth. They're not.
What the hell? Where is this?
From what it currently is. He was very influential in the 60s. He was started the
counter. That's Walter.
When you're disassociated, you look at it in a picture. Mind control all the time. And they really, Monsanto, they have no problem. It's fair that banks can come in and take over. The banks came in and shut us down. Because still, after all this time, nobody's put any money up. Structure change, finance. And I had to go and prove my case for a long period of time. So one of the people that Walter Bower introduced me to was somebody who was active in the intelligence community that was very active in the 70s by the name of Bob Neverett, who I still work with today. He's probably listening right now. He put me in touch with him because at a very young age I was dealing with military people, like high profile people when I was very young, and just calling them directly. One of them I was talking to Tom Bearden all the time. I didn't understand anything he was talking about, but I knew what he was talking about was major. And I couldn't understand, how come nobody's getting money for what you're doing? I mean, it's pretty major, your discoveries. And that was Tom Bearden. And I was on the Freedom of Thought Foundation with Colonel Thomas Bearden.
And me,
changes finance.
I was on the board of the Freedom of Thought. They never had a meeting. Nothing was ever done.
And I had to go and prove my case for a long period of time. So one of the people that Walter Bower introduced me to was somebody
sorry about
active
this.
In the intelligence community that was very active in the 70s.
The 70s? This is 30 years later. Bob was a little more active in the 80s and 90s.
Bob Neverett, who I still work with today, who's probably listening right now. He put me in touch with him because...
I'm listening right now.
Yeah.
He predicted that.
Yeah.
At a very young age, I was dealing with military people, like high-profile people when I was very young, and just calling them directly. One of them, I was talking to Tom Bearden all the time. I didn't understand anything he was talking about, but I knew what he was talking about was major. And I couldn't understand, how come nobody's getting money for what you're doing? I mean, it's pretty major, your discoveries. And that was Tom Bearden. And I was on the Freedom of Thought Foundation with Colonel Thomas Bearden, also Fletcher Prouty. Fletcher Prouty was the character in the Oliver Stone movie, Mr. X. He wrote a book called The Secret Team. All of them knew about what the banks were doing. They knew about mind control. They knew all of this stuff. And they were figuring out, how in the world are we going to change this situation that we're in? So I continued on radio, and much of the message that I was transmitting, because I was the number one show on that network, I was co-hosting it. And what happened was I brought...
Co-hosting with who? Is that all we're going to hear from Bob Neverett?
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yeah.
Neverett on the air.
Oh, there's Neverett. Now, it might be hard to find this again.
Marsh McLuhan,
so it's...
I continued on radio, and much of the message that I was transmitting, because I was the number one show on that network. I was co-hosting it. And what happened was
we were the number one show on G Radio, which was fucking nowhere, and we beat the tarot lady. Nobody was listening until, oh, that's right, I was going to ask something about today. I have a question for Ian.
I'm never on air.
Oh,
and we
sorry.
Started talking about media call. I continued on radio, and much of the message that I was transmitting, because I was the number one show on that network, I was co-hosting it, and what happened was I brought Bob Neverett on the air, and we started talking about media ecology and what Marshall McLuhan had to say about technology and what it does to perception, what it does to culture, what it does to disruption, and how people...
There was no we. I screwed up there. There was no we.
Wow. Look at this. 94% of people believe company culture is important.
What do you do?
Handle that particular situation. And then, lo and behold, it didn't fit. It was the number one show on that network. I was co-hosting it. And what happened was I brought Bob Neverett on the air, and we started talking about media ecology.
No, I started talking about it for 55 minutes, and he said nothing. I did 6 or 8 months of monologues.
What Marshall McLuhan had to say about technology and what it does to perception, what it does to culture, what it does to disruption, and how people handle that particular situation. And then, lo and behold, it didn't fit into... A lot of people didn't want to hear about cold fusion. They didn't understand that. So while I was on the air, live, I was fired with my business colleague, Bob Neverett. And I don't think those archives are still available for public, but he was threatened.
Yeah, we got the archives here on my site.
I was kind of like, it was kind of a blessing in disguise, because I didn't agree with a lot of the things he was talking about. You know, violence and guns and gold and, you know, all the things that a lot of the networks are suggesting are prepping everybody.
That was John Stadtmiller, who was a Minuteman.
Do right now in the United States. I wasn't going to have any part of that. And I needed a way to get out of there. So when he fired me on the air, I'm like, great, good for you. All right, fine, I'm out of there. So what happened immediately after that is I got a lot of email, and I was getting lots of email from all over the world about, oh, this is great that you're suing the banks, and I can't believe you're doing that. How are you still alive? And da, 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 da. And then I got invited to go on another network. And I said, okay, I want to see how this is going to I'm going to do it on my own. And then when I just started doing it on my own, then it gave me full access to say what I needed to say, get who I wanted to talk to, and that's where I was going to start uplifting the entire self-image and self-esteem of all the cold fusion scientists who'd been totally beaten down and were almost like wounded from what happened with Pons and Fleischmann when their discovery. And I started to investigate myself personally by talking to people off the air and on the air about what's really going on here. So here's how it went. I decided what I was going to do is slowly integrate cold fusion into some of the media ecology stuff, talking about perception, talking about what technology does to human beings.
See, that's all you can say. Perception, what technology does, and maybe the word disruption. That's all you can say. You said it 10 times already.
Now it changes how we interact and communicate. So I began by suggestion. Bob Neverett, he said, okay, this is the guy you need to go talk to. Go talk to Dr. Edmund Storm. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll call him up.
Yeah, I told him to go talk to Dr. Storm.
Very open. He's like the nicest guy. I'm like, I talked to him off air, and I said, listen, I really want to talk to all the people in cold fusion about what's really going on. And the history, where it is now, where it's going to go, what do you guys need, all of that, because I think the world needs to hear this. And I was just total small time. In radio. And I did that by design. I didn't want to go into some massive network where I'm have to deal with some corporate bullshit that's going to stop me and censor me. I really can't stand that stuff. In fact, freedom of speech in the United States, it's not free anymore. I'm like an enemy of the state right now for what I've done. A lot of people in radio are being threatened. A lot of the families are being threatened because they're bringing up stuff that really they don't want anybody to know about. So I decided I'm going to go on my own. I'm going to do this myself. So I began interviewing. Edmund Storm was the first interview that I did. He was incredibly graceful, very helpful, and I thought this guy's got a...
So he got Ruby, or Robin, to make the website, and they put up a few of these interviews, and Then James disappeared, went to the aqueduct, what's it called? Viaduct. And that ended that. So this is his spiel about what he'd already kind of done with us. But he's at this point, like he barely could get to this conference. And after this conference, he retired into poverty and starvation. And he hasn't surfaced until recently. So let's, everybody, if you meet anybody, tell them to listen to this. What's the date? June 19th, 6 o'clock, so the third and fourth hour. Listen to our get James to listen to our commentary on what he said here 11 or 9 years ago. So that's enough of that for now. Let's see, where do we go? Okay, are there comments? I'll have to update it first. Pizza's ready, people. Once a week we get a pizza. Okay, so going back... Cider Somerset says, I think you may have still been top secret at the time, Bob. No, this is 2012. We've been on the radio for 3 or 4 years. We're quite open. Matthew says, Cold Fusion now. Dimitri says, thanks, Cider, and thanks, Jack and Bob, for the amazing show yesterday and insights about the history of the effects of technology. Cider Somerset gives Dim a thumbs up. Minimax kind of laughs. Scott says, James who? Yeah, Scott doesn't know this history. And then Cider says, I thought Bob might like the link. I did not think he would play it, but it's interesting listening to Bob commenting on it in real time and correcting it. That's right. Now, Malcolm says, a rambling resume of feigned relevance. Correct, Malcolm. Malcolm. Quote, everybody wants to rule the world. I guess James said something like that. Then he says, cold fusion confusion. Yes. And then he quotes James, here's the background of more about me. And then laughs. Cider Somerset laughs at me calling him Cyber Somerset and says, oh, I'm not bad. Then Roy says, nice commentary, Bob, nice commentary on James. Why was James so skeptical of IAM? He was always enthusiastic, and he wrote promos on the station about selling RNA drops, but he borrowed some money from us, and then maybe he got guilty about that because he had no money. And I think he got resentful that we carried on without him, even though we offered him to come on anytime he wanted to. And the rumor is he made us famous, and he didn't get anything out of it, which is stupid. He's always been welcome. And then Scott says, oh, Martinez. Then Moonwalker says, no play, cold play. And Bobby Dazzler says, well done, J.J. Dockets. I don't know who that is. Kyle gives a link. Minimax says, Bob is glistening right now. Glistening. No, he says glistening. You mean listening, Minimax? Susanna says, amazing. So many words, but not saying much. That's what everybody recognizes. Because he's building up, and he never gets to any nouns and verbs and kind of a conclusion. Men says, I just really want to hear Ion in the background yelling, this numb nut motherfucker. That's right. Cider Summer says, this looks like his last interview. Yeah, it is. It's not an interview. James is speaking at a conference in Amsterdam. James Martinez, human nanotechnology, August... Oh, he's saying something else, August 12, 2014, his last interview. Then he was on Off Planet Radio, yeah, a couple of years ago. They dumped talking about RNA drops and got into Bucky Fuller's Bucky Ball, some product. that was a buckyball stuff, and I don't know if it kept him alive. So that's all the notes we got there. So that's the commentary, Carolyn. Now, to get us out of this mess, let's bring on Denny. Okay, Denny, you're on the air with Ion, if Ion's still there.